I don't wanna be the boy that runs in the back. I don't wanna be the kid that falls in the dark. All I really want to be is the guy that gets that girl.
Welcome to the AJ Steele Show. We discuss politics, sex, money, and everything in between. And now, here's your host, an immigrant, a self-made millionaire, an American, AJ Steele. Everything I say and do, I'm just
not good enough for you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for another episode of the AJ Steele Show. When I first told some media buddies of mine that I was interviewing Steve Bannon's former co-host, Jack Maxey, a gentleman who also happens to be the guy who exposed the Hunter Biden laptop from hell to the mainstream media, many of my connected friends warned me not to put him on. Some of them told me that he is KGB. Others warned me that he's a virulent never-Trumper. And still others warned me that he is a CIA operative, a Mossad agent, and or an Israel-hating anti-Semite. Well, the more they told me not to talk to him, the more I actually wanted to hear what he had to say. Not because I agree with him on everything, but because we need to hear from people we don't always agree with. And to be honest, the AJ Steele Show is not like all the other kiss-ass shows on both sides of the political spectrum who only book people who make him feel comfortable. But I don't need the people who come on my show to constantly stroke me or to tell me how beautiful and smart I am. My mom and grandma already did that for me when I was growing up. And yes, if that doesn't prove that I'm Jewish, I don't know what will. But all kidding aside, I want to hear differing opinions. I want to hear other viewpoints. In other words, I don't expect my show to be some type of a mutual admiration society. It's a real show for real people, and I try to respectfully, emphasis on respectfully, let my guests say their piece. I don't feel that it's my job to debate and argue every stupid point like an idiot. I'm not here like Tucker Carlson or, who is it, Candace Owens, sitting around with that idiotic grin or that stupid cat who swallowed the canary smile, just trying to score points or showing how snarky I can be or maybe how viral my show can go. I'm not here to nurse my ego. Trust me, my ego is plenty big. It's just fine. And if my friends can't handle me interviewing someone they don't approve of, then so be it. And so yesterday, Jack Maxey and I, we got together and I threw a lot of different questions his way. And he answered them in what I believe to be the honest truth as he sees it. From my perspective, I found him to be highly intelligent, very sensible, thoughtful, knowledgeable. And to tell you the truth, I really enjoyed talking to him. Some of the things he told me made perfect sense and were absolutely enlightening to me. Some of them bordered on conspiracy theory, and some were purely political opinions. And I do have to say that he made a very interesting choice when he predicted who's going to be our next president. But he also said a lot of things about Donald Trump, which I disagreed with, but not all of them. I fully agreed with him that Donald Trump did not drain the swamp, and that he didn't exactly hire the most stellar staff. Regardless of that, I still believe that Donald Trump is the best and maybe the last hope for America. And in my opinion, folks who only point out his negatives while ignoring his immense positives are being utterly disingenuous at worst and petty at best. In life, we have to pick a side and we have to take a stand. We can't just sit in the peanut gallery forever and just criticize and criticize ad nauseum. And I'm personally so sick and tired of folks on our side who say, I'm voting for Trump, but. Well, there's no but. The time for buts is over. We either do the right thing or America is finished, period, end of story. And don't tell me about conservative purity tests and about abortions and about the fact that he was a womanizer. I don't care about any of that. Donald Trump, when he was president, did a lot more for religious people in America and for the unborn than any other of those phonies. These holier-than-thou presidents walking around with their big Bibles and a big gold cross around their necks, just like that phony Pope. Oh yeah, they were wonderful presidents. like Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. What a good Christian he was. And that biggest phony of them all, that Judas Mike Pence. And man, I really can't stand that guy. So to clarify for all of you out there, I am 100% behind Mr. Trump. And I plan to speak out and open my wallet and do everything in my power to help him get elected. Now, Mr. Maxey also said a couple of things about Bibi Netanyahu and the situation in Israel, which I genuinely disagree with. But I never once felt that he said anything that was anti-Semitic or hateful. It's possible that he has some real bad information, or maybe he's just trying to be controversial and a contrarian. But free discussion, which includes an honest exchange of ideas, means that you're not always going to agree. And that's okay. The truth sometimes falls somewhere right in the middle. And the only way to learn something new and reach true detente is to engage with the other side. And that's exactly what I did. Respectfully. Now, I don't want to belabor this conversation any further because I think that you're entitled to hear exactly what was said from the person who said it. What I will belabor is reminding you to please subscribe to our show if you haven't done so already, and to please spread the word about us to your family and friends and through your social media, because that's the only way a truly independent show like ours can grow. All of you who know me by now understand that I do these shows as a labor of love, and that I don't take or ask for any money from anybody. I have my own money, and I most certainly don't have any kind of plan to take any of yours. Okay, it's time for me to take our first break, and so I'm going to do that, and when we get back, you'll hear my entire conversation with Jack Maxey. I am AJ Steele, and this is the AJ Steele Show.
All I really want to be is the guy that gets the girl.
The AJ Steele Show. Think of your loudmouth best friend, hated by all the wives, because he tells it just like it is.
You finally see your love belongs to me.
Jack Maxey was a co-host of Steve Bannon's War Room Pandemic and rose to national prominence after he released the Hunter Biden laptop from hell to the media. As a thank you for helping expose the truth about corruption and deviance in President Joe Biden's administration, he's been shadow banned, followed by government goons, and turned into a pariah in his own nation, to the point that he actually escaped to Switzerland for his own personal safety. Mr. Maxey, welcome to the AJ Steele Show.
Hey, AJ, thanks a lot for having me. I mean, when I took off for Switzerland in March of 22, that was because I didn't feel comfortable doing that kind of work inside the United States. And I had previously been a young American leader, a guest of the Swiss government some years back. Our former ambassador there, Faith Whittlesey, was a dear friend of mine. The people in the three letters know her. She's now dead, but she played an integral role back in the 80s when we actually had an intelligence service that cared about this country. Saddest part, I was Steve's co-host. And in part, one of the reasons I left there was because Steve told me in January of 21 that if I mentioned Hunter Biden's name and the FBI in the same sentence again, he would fire me. He was terrified of these people. I mean, a month after the inauguration, Donald Trump refused a briefing on the laptop. None of these people wanted to do anything. Because, AJ, everything points back to the CIA and the FBI in either dereliction of their duty, incompetence, or complicity in a slate of crimes that span the entire globe.
You know, it's a scary world, and I hear that Steve Bannon might end up in prison after all. Jack, we usually do a lot of prep before we do these interviews, but in your case, I wasn't really able to get a lot of information about you. Who are you?
Just an American guy, raised properly, went to Yale, went into the Navy after Yale. After that, I lived in Spain for a brief period of time, in Madrid. Those guys remember me from there, too. And then I went to Wall Street. And then I got married. I moved out to L.A. I tried to write comedy for a little while. Had a kid, had to get back to reality. Got another job kind of in finance and sort of alternative areas. Did that for 12 years and lived in Puerto Rico for quite some time. Had a business over there. I'm a restless soul, shall we say.
I like that. So I first heard about you from a lovely lady named Naomi, who is a listener of our show and follows both of us on X. And she thought that my listeners would really love to hear from you. Now, I've also noticed that you're one of those guys who calls them, like you see them. And while I don't agree with all of your calls, I respect that you don't care who or whom you offend. So unlike the other shows, I don't just want to talk about the laptop and about Hunter Biden. I actually want to hear your opinions on a lot of things. And I'm going to throw out a couple of questions for you, and hopefully we can cover a lot of ground. Let's start with the presidential election that we have coming up in November. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think that Donald Trump is a dangerous bet to throw all your money on in this race. And I'll tell you why. He's winning by 4-6% nationwide, right? Okay, they say he's got a couple of the battleground states. I haven't seen him or his team do anything to change the things that made the election problematic last time, including mail-in ballots. The arrogance still seems to be there. He's got the same crew. He still hires his family. You know, one of his daughter-in-law is like number two at the RNC now. Really? What is the qualification for that? I guess it's the same qualification as the last one, you know, related to a bigwig, remember, Rona Romney. So I think that's problematic because I think the Democrats always play to win. I mean, you notice even Robert Kennedy's sister's like, I can't support him because that would divide the Democratic vote. Joe Biden's not going to be the nominee. Everybody knows that. The only gamble the Democratic Party is making right now is that he dies between the convention and today, and then they have to deal with Kamala Harris. But I think they're going to pull something like what they did in 92. I think they're going to pull somebody out of the Midwest with a nice accent, make everybody feel comfortable. It's not like Bill Clinton, you know, it's not like Donald Trump. He doesn't curse people out and get in fights with 8-year-olds. I think they're going to pull in a guy like Manchin. And if they do that, I think the calculus for MAGA changes dramatically. And I think the calculus for MAGA would change dramatically if a Democrat said, hey, you know, Bobby Kennedy's going to be my guy. Let's say it's a very thin victory of margin, and experience has shown us that margin is not enough because the GOP lost in 18, 20, and 22 with him as the head of the party.
Well, I don't personally see a way that they're going to let Donald Trump become president again. I've been talking about this for years now, even right after he lost the 2020 election or was cheated out of it. They're going to stop him either by cheating again or bankrupting him or locking him up or making him do a plea deal where he stays out of jail if he agrees not to run. I don't see it happening. But if I'm right and the deep state wins again, is there any hope left for America? If Trump can't do it, who can?
If Donald Trump is actually going to drain the swamp and attack the deep state, explain to me why he hired and could not fire Christopher Wray. Explain to me why this guy tweeted just after Christmas Day that not only should their new $550 million headquarters, I'm speaking of the FBI, be the greatest building ever built in American history, it really should be on the Mall because the FBI's equivalent of the Washington Monument. This is out of Trump's own mouth 3 months ago. And he's going to clean up that agency? Let's think about Donald Trump and how he got into trouble. It's very clear. I want people in America to understand that he was betrayed inside his own circle. And I'll name names right now.
Well, let's go for it. And by the way, I don't share your belief that he didn't try to drain the swamp. I think his heart is in the right place.
A guy whose heart's in the right place, who was supposed to take out the machine gun and the whole platoon got killed because, you know, he tried, but not really hard enough. That's not good. You know, I mean, we're in a life and death struggle for the country, and this guy's never willing to put himself at risk.
Yeah, but since we're going to do this, let's expand on this.
Let me explain what happened, right? Remember in the summer of 2016, we start hearing this information about the Steele dossier and Donald Trump's, you know, having urine parties in Moscow hotels, and there's this mysterious character, Misfit, who can prove it, and you've got the Cambridge professor. All this stuff comes out after the election, right? And Everybody testifies. Well, I don't know. I don't, Gina Haspel's there before the Senate. I don't even know who Misfit is. Gina Haspel was the station chief for the CIA in London at the time of this operation.
True.
Nonsense that she doesn't know who Misfit is because she used to be station chief in Ankara. And Misfit's a Turk who's worked for the agency for decades. So she lied on camera to the American people. Now, you know, let's fast forward. Donald Trump gets the inauguration. He puts Mike Pompeo, the brave Kansan, you know, into the catbird seat at CIA. He does nothing to reform it. Absolutely nothing. He does nothing to even expose his own agency's participation in the earlier attempt to subvert an election in 2016. And then when, you know, the ignoramus Donald Trump, I have to say he has a very poor judge of character. He continually chooses betrayers, but sycophants. And so he moves the great Mike Pompeo, who is just going to, now he's going to go drain the swamp at State Department, right? They move Pompeo to State Department. And who does Pompeo and Barr replace Pompeo with at CIA?
Correct.
Gina Haspel, correct. The same exact woman who was in charge of the operation to subvert an American election in 2016. What people have to wake up to is the people choosing our leadership are not you and me. These are the agencies who need to have people in there who can reliably cover up their BS. And Donald Trump's reliable too. Remember, he didn't release the Kennedy papers. He didn't release the 9/11 documents. So in these benign opportunities to prove he's going to drain the swamp, he's done nothing. And then I think everybody should watch it. Megyn Kelly did a podcast with Sammy the Bull Gravano in March of 22. I was literally hunkered down in central Switzerland with like Swiss Hell's Angels, like watching over me. That's how sick it was. And
they have those in Switzerland.
Hell yeah, man. They're just like ours. They're good, good American men who don't take BS, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're sort of like universal cowboys. I kind of like to think of them, you know, their word is their bond and you don't want to get crosswise with them. Right? So, I'm watching this podcast and she's asking Sammy the Bull Gravano. He's the guy turned on the Gambinos, yes. Right? You know, destroyed the five families. And he's talking about how they took a VIG out of every yard of concrete that was sold in Manhattan in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And she told me, oh, well, Donald Trump built several buildings back then in the 80s and the early 90s. You know, did you take a VIG out of him too? And this is Sammy's response, and everybody should listen clearly about the big Braveheart who's going to drain the swamp. Sammy says, you know, it's an interesting comment. He goes, we actually, by agreement, decided that we were all going to leave Donald Trump alone. She goes, well, why would you do that? He goes, well, at that time, Donald Trump had anywhere between 6 and 12 retired and moonlighting FBI agents as his security detail. So I'm pretty sure those fellows with that FBI omerta have shared every Stormy Daniel with their superiors, or they're holding that over him. He's not going to do anything. That's why he believes in the shiny new headquarters and wants to high five all the brave agents. Because let's stop this lie. And I used to believe it. Listen, my uncle was a deputy director of the FBI. I was raised to love this agency. My grandmother was one of the original people in the OSS and CIA. You know, for me to criticize these agencies is like to go against, you know, my family credo, but reality must be done. He's not going to do anything.
So are you saying that he is a vain, hapless kind of guy, or is he controlled opposition, or is he evil? What are you trying to say here?
You know what Trump is? He's a lot like Netanyahu, and for the same reason, they're both absolutely dangerous. They put themselves always first, right? Netanyahu needs to escalate things just to stay in power because people are in the streets, but you know, no one wants to replace the government in the midst of a hot war that he's got to keep hot to stay there. Donald Trump's got to talk smack. He didn't pardon the J6 people, and he could have, right? Because Jimmy Carter pardoned 160,000 draft dodgers, and there were carve-outs for violence. There were carve-outs for people who did things bad. right? But he pardoned everybody for missing movements and going AWOL and not filing for their selective service. Donald Trump could have done the same with J6. He would have gone down as a legend in American history. He would have been the kingmaker for every politician for the rest of his life, because he would have shown himself worthy to be the kind of American man he claims he is. You know why he didn't? Because Lindsey Graham said, if you do, I'm going to vote to impeach you. And then Donald's only punishment would have been he couldn't run for president again.
You're not answering my question, Jack. You're not answering my question. Is Donald Trump, according to you, an evil man or a controlled man? Please give me an answer to that.
Oh, I would not say he's evil. I would say he's venal and vain. And as a result, he does things that are not necessarily in the interests of others.
That's a fair answer. I agree with the vain part. I think most politicians are vain. Most people in power enjoy the power. That's a par for the course.
The AJ Steele Show will be right back.
You are listening to the AJ Steele Show, where no topic is off limits, no discussion too harsh, no truth more true. The AJ Steele Show, we tell it like it is.
Now, let me jump back to Biden for a second. And I'd like to point out that I don't necessarily agree with everything you said about Donald Trump. I do agree that his hands were tied because of either connections that he's had in the past or because of our crooked government. I don't think the Republicans are conservatives. They're definitely not on our side. But let's talk about Biden for a second, if you don't mind. Do you feel that Biden and his administration are just a bunch of bumbling fools who are messing up everything in the world? Or are they just working according to some kind of a globalist plan?
No, I think the globalist plan is actually falling apart. I think this looming collapse of Ukraine is going to pull the veil away from a lot of things. You're going to watch many European governments fail, including the Polish government, I might add. You know, their people are tired of it. Here's what I think the Biden's role in this entire thing, and I think why he was the chosen winner of the 2020 election. I say chosen because, let's stop pretending. The CIA brags about interfering in over 100 elections around the world in the last 40 years, using any dirty trick possible. And then they take that as a matter of pride. For one moment, do you think to protect themselves, to keep the evil that they've been up to for the last decade, particularly in Ukraine? And I will tell you, both are connected. Ukraine and Wuhan are absolutely connected because the same people ran those biolabs for the CIA and DOD under U.S. Department of Agriculture. You know, Black and Veatch, you can call all their employees. They were the contractors who paid everybody. This is the key that breaks the lock. This is the reason that we have to not allow any of Ukraine's territory to be taken. This is the reason that we're in a war in Ukraine. This is the reason all of Hunter's, you know, sweetheart deals in Ukraine were covered up, because it all leads back to Langley. And it all leads back, quite frankly, the scientific research to Fauci, who was not only making the staffing decisions, I'm told, but he was also making decisions concerning the science that was going to be pursued. Here's a simple way that any normal, thoughtful person can come to the same conclusion. And I've got all the documents. It's all there. I've got people ready to testify, but the U.S. Congress won't do that because they're all blackmailed by the same agencies. So here's a way you can understand this, right? Pretty much the general consensus from The Guardian to Le Monde to the whole world is like, this COVID stuff came from a lab, and it likely came from Wuhan, right? We're all kind of like, okay. But no one does anything, right? If that were the case, why wouldn't the United States government be excoriating, you know, the Chinese for destroying the planet? Why wouldn't MI6 and GHCQ and the British Prime Minister be doing the same? Why wouldn't all of the other compatriots in this, you know, intelligence scam, you know, the lackeys in Germany, to a lesser extent the French, but all of Five Eyes? There were scientists in Wuhan from Australia. There were scientists in Wuhan from the United States. There were scientists from Great Britain. So this is why they don't criticize the Chinese, because the truth will be out that they were there too, just as guilty. This says that's just a simple way to do it. Human nature, like you're trying to figure out whether or not your kid's lying about did he eat the cookie. It's that simple.
Well, getting back to Ukraine, and I agree with you. It's definitely a conspiracy. I know we sound like two conspiracy nuts, but it doesn't mean that we're wrong. Okay.
And witnesses.
Of course. And I spoke out against the COVID situation when it first happened. I'm a medical person. I knew all about it. It was nonsense, and it was human-made. But getting back to Ukraine, just today, I think, or the other day, I heard that there's rumblings that they're going to admit them into NATO. What is this all about? Do the globalists really want a third world war with Putin?
Here's what you have to understand. People who are narcissists will never admit wrong, right? And in some regards, sociopaths as well, right? All of the intelligence services are, sociopaths are useful, right? Because they'll do crap that you don't, normal people won't do, and they'll be able to sleep at night, So you look at what's happened, the lies that the Western governments have told their people, that victory is just over the horizon. We are going to destroy Russia. And as Lindsey Graham says, use the body of Ukrainian youths to do it.
By the way, he likes the bodies of Ukrainian youths from what I hear.
Listen, this guy's never seen a war that he didn't want to send your son and daughter to go die in. Mm-hmm. He's never seen a man in uniform that didn't make him weak in the knees. Why do you think he was always like running around behind John McCain? I mean, this guy is such a Nancy boy. It's off the charts. And so we have Ukraine. We have those bio labs that didn't exist. Remember, Putin said something about, oh, they don't exist. But then when I provide the world with 250 documents from Hunter's computer proving their existence, Hunter first went, goes to Ukraine to try and sell a private placement for the company Metabiota that ends up running all those bio labs. Hunter goes to meet, who does he go to meet? He goes to meet with the oligarchs at Burisma because he knows, hey, man, those guys apparently will throw money. They're corrupt as hell. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the U.S. government's been making cash from Burisma. So Hunter goes to them first. A month and a half later, he's on their payroll. Mm-hmm. Guess who else is on the payroll of Burisma? And anybody can look this up. His name is Kofer Black, C-O-F-E-R Black. He sits on the board with Hunter. He's listed in open documents in the registry of the corporation in Cyprus. You can look at that too. Now, who is Kofer Black? Kofer Black was a senior CIA intelligence guy. He worked directly for John Brennan when Brennan was in Saudi Arabia and the Middle East. He was in 1999, 2000, up through September, the head of the Osama bin Laden task force down in Sudan.
Wow.
After 9/11, he has moved over to the State Department, where he's given an ambassadorial title, and he becomes the ambassador in charge of weapons of mass destruction. You can look him up. There's plenty of videos about him bragging about his prior career, C-SPAN, television, whatever. He sits on the board with Hunter. His signature is next to Hunter's on every corporate document. Why has the United States Congress not called the ambassador for weapons of mass destruction? Doesn't anybody find it interesting that a CIA guy who was later the ambassador of weapons of mass destruction ends up with an $82,000 job at the crooked Ukrainian gas company alongside Hunter in the country where they've got all the biolabs, and now, as we know from the New York Times, a dozen or more CIA bases? Put the two and two together, people. You're being scammed. And these agencies, in order to cover up their criminal activity, which would destroy them, they would not be able to exist in their current fashion ever again. And it wouldn't just be CIA. It'd be MI6. It'd be all of the intelligence agencies that have participated in this nonsense. This is, to me, clear as day. I don't know why it's not clear to others. And I don't know why Kofer Black has not been called in.
Well, I think we know why. Now, speak of the laptop. You were one of the first in America to view it and to disseminate it to the media. And I know that many folks, including myself, thought that this would be the smoking gun that would destroy Joe Biden in 2020, but it didn't, because the story was squashed and by the media and all the spy agencies. They all said that it was Russian disinformation. Could you go back a little bit and tell us how you got your hands on it in the first place? And my next question is, and it's kind of important and sad at the same time, do you think that the story still has legs in 2024? Does anybody care?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. Because our own allies are about to turn on us. Hmm. We've destroyed the economies of Western Europe. They have been led to lie to their own people in this farce that they were told American supplies and American industrial might could support. We can't even provide enough 155-millimeter artillery rounds. The total capacity of America is about 100,000 rounds a year. That's like a week's supply, and that's with the Ukrainians using half of what is at the disposal of the Russians at will.
Wow.
So this lie has been known for a long time. The Royal Military Institute Great Britain wrote a fantastic paper on this in June of 22, describing exactly what has happened. So nobody can pretend they didn't know. So I think there's going to become a certain point where someone has to become the scapegoat, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody has to become responsible for it, because it's certainly not going to become Macron. You know, certainly Schultz is not going to take responsibility. This is going to be, well, Anthony Blinken and the CIA director promised us, right? And now then we're going to have to go back and do the retrospective study where we may actually be able to find the guilty now, because we're looking for scapegoats as to who actually destroyed Nord Stream. And then you're going to watch the disintegration of NATO, because they're going to have to deal with the hypocrisy of why they didn't declare war on the United States if, you know, they committed that act of war. You ever notice how when they commit these crimes, when they are the ones who commit them, they can never find the guilty culprits, but they always have an answer. There's a couple of Polish guys out of Danzig, Genoa 38. Really? No.
Yeah, well, Poland just voted in a very liberal government that supports NATO. Are you thinking that the power structure is in Europe? You think that Macron and Germany are more powerful than the United States? Is that what you're saying?
I think that these governments are all going to collapse. Mm. I even think that the Polish government's going to collapse eventually. I think the Swedes are, you know, scratching their heads about joining NATO right now. I would say that thoughtful Finns are doing the same thing. I was asked by Swedish media in 22 about this. Maybe I should publish it. I gave them a very reasoned answer as to why they should not do this, including our inability to win the industrial war of artillery bombardment that the Ukraine war is. This is in March of 22.
Wow.
I think that thoughtful people are beginning to realize that NATO is a farce. And one of the reasons you can tell that NATO feels absolutely weak, just look at Twitter. I've never seen so many little advertisements of NATO 75 years strong, NATO, you know, protecting the world, NATO, NATO, NATO. Let's look at what NATO's engaged in. And since the fall of the wall, prior to that, they had some use. But since the fall of the wall, what have they engaged in? Well, they've engaged in the destruction of Yugoslavia, the German chancellor to recognize their former Nazi allies in Croatia without debate. And we throw the Balkans into absolute chaos and hundreds of thousands of people die. NATO, well done. Then they get talked into Gulf War I by the feckless, you know, former CIA director George Bush.
Correct.
And you know, that is a total disaster, a waste of blood and treasure, and nothing changes. In fact, Saddam Hussein stays in power, and there's some question as to whether or not that war was fomented by the U.S. ambassador in Kuwait telling him, you know, hey, we're
going to invade. I remember that very clearly.
Right? Mm-hmm. So NATO gets involved in that, and then 9/11 comes around, and they get involved in a greater Middle Eastern war, and then they get involved in Syria. And the end result for the people of Western Europe, who are the beneficiaries of this great umbrella of protection, is that they've been forced to adopt every irrational leftist ideology of the United States socially. And on top of that, they've been forced to buy into this idea that they are morally responsible for these tens of millions of refugees from the Middle East who are boat people because the U.S. talked them into blowing the Middle East apart. So at some point, the guy on the street is scratching his head, looking around at, you know, women in burqas going, this is not what I signed on for. And NATO is like, you know, I said in a post recently, I said, NATO's a bit like that guy. When I watch all these commercials, a bit like that guy's bleeding out and he's repeating over and over again, I'm okay, I'm okay, it's going to collapse.
I think that Donald Trump spoke very clearly against NATO. He was correct in his assessment. NATO has always been just propped by us, really, financially and probably militarily. They can't fight. We all know that. The Europeans can't fight. They don't have a military right now. I spoke about the war in Ukraine when it first started, and I said that Putin will not lose the war. And he looks to me like he's able to build lots of weapons. Well, his industry is much more successful than even ours, which is a scary thing.
Our interview with Jack Maxey will continue right after this.
AJ Steele, not right, not left, just right.
Since we're talking about wars, I want to jump to Israel a little bit because I want to cover everything, if you don't mind. It looks like this is going to turn into a much wider conflict with Hezbollah and, more dangerously, Iran. What are your thoughts on this war, and which side do you think Biden and his bosses, including Obama, are standing on?
I think Biden and his bosses have been doing Netanyahu's bidding 100%. And I can explain this on your show. And listen, I love Israel. Trust me. I almost sent my son over there a couple of years ago to volunteer. I tried to get him to do it. I have great respect for the Israeli people. I was blessed as a child to have Holocaust survivors who I knew. I feel as if I'm a witness to that part of history. But Israel has an existential problem right now in that a nation state that is founded upon such a moral high ground has perhaps an unfair, but I think necessary obligation to live up to a standard that, you know, is compatible with the experience. And I think that what's happening right now in Israel is, sadly, this is not the Israel that I learned to love in, say, 1973. You know, this is not Menachem Begin's Israel anymore. The collapse of the Soviet Union drove many people into Israel who were not necessarily bound with the same emotional context. I think there's been an Israel that has become more selfish on an individual basis on the street. You see this with the explosion of the entrance of the Hasidim, who are not working, are not fighting.
True.
Demanding that they get paid to study the Talmud. You know, we have to remember the Israel of 1975 was a very secular state, a very, almost a state for Israel as a people, as a race of people, as much as it was for a religious purpose. And I think that's flipped. I think that you have some of the radicals who do not represent the character of what I used to believe in. Are there because Netanyahu's desperate to keep power because he's afraid he'll get prosecuted if he's no longer in power. He has aligned himself with some absolute crazies who speak in some ways about the Palestinians in ways that I haven't heard since, you know, reading translations of Goebbels.
And I would like to draw a line there. I completely disagree with you. Goebbels spoke against the people who didn't have a military. He spoke about a people who were not terrorists.
He spoke about people who lived in Germany and in Europe and who were completely peaceful.
People that speak out against the Palestinian terror are very different. It's a very different situation. So I don't think there's any kind of equivalency here at all.
I agree with you 100%. But if there's anything that we could have learned, it is that words that dehumanize other human beings always lead to murder. I think that was the fundamental thing that we learned from the awful experience that the Jewish people and the whole world had to witness in the 1940s, is that words do matter. And some of the rhetoric I've found very disturbing, and I don't think it's representative of the greater Israel. And I think, sadly, Israel is having this PR problem around the world because of some people who are outspoken and are perhaps not the best communicators. I said the day after this happened on air, I said, please release all of the video footage today. Don't let people ruminate over this, you know? Let them see it. Let the world see the horror of what it was. I said the same thing about 9/11. Why they protect us from these things and then expect us to want to go die for this, the cause, is to me a bit strange. I believe in Israel. I support Israel. I just think that Israel is chasing a dangerous animal right now. And I think they have to understand that although they've been at general peace with Egypt and Jordan, and, you know, Syria has been kept at bay, I don't think that Israel would be in a good position if this turned into a larger Middle Eastern war, even if they could win it, because the effects on everyone on planet Earth because of loss of all of
oil,
Middle East would be crushed. You know, they'd get maybe the same canard of a blame everything bad on them. I'm just saying, I think Israel needs to find a way to live in security inside their own country. I think one thing that I'm very disappointed after October 7th is nobody has had an honest discussion about the absolute intelligence failure on the part of Mossad, on the part of CIA. How do you import 150, 200 ultralights into a country that doesn't even have an airport? How do they then train with them for a year and nobody's paying attention? That part, I think we need to see. I think we need to have a clarity about, because tactics are very important, right? You're surrounded by enemies. I think we need to have a clear understanding of what exactly happened when the Israeli Defense Force responded to the kibbutzim on the border. How many people died by friendly fire? Well, how do we reform, our tactics going forward with what we know? None of this has been discussed at all. And I think it's necessary to be discussed in order for Israel to go forward. I think all these things are openly discussed would benefit Israel.
Jack, before we take our break, I'd like to make a couple of points. Number one, I don't think that Israel has a PR problem because of its PR. I think it has a PR problem because it's a Jewish state. That's number one. Number two, I'm not so certain that what happened on October 7th wasn't something that was supported by our CIA or the American government and the leftists in Israel. So these are two things that I would like to add to this.
The AJ Steele Show will be right back.
The AJ Steele Show. Think of your loudmouth best friend, hated by all the wives, because he tells it just like it is. Finally see your love
belongs to me. So we're covering some great things about Israel and Ukraine. What's going on with China and Taiwan?
China and Taiwan, I think, is an interesting situation. But if you allow me, I wish to go just back to Israel, because I don't want to be painted as somebody who is claiming, you know, they have some PR problem. But perception is reality. The reality is the perception is not good. I want the rest of the world to love Israel as much as I do. So, and they are working very hard. You see it on Twitter as well. You know, they're interviewing people from the IDF, young women, you know, I'm fighting for my country. I want that to be the story. And unfortunately, that currently is not the story. That's my whole point. When we talk about Taiwan, I think that the United States government has been, in some regards, goading the Chinese into responses that perhaps may not be to our benefit. Particularly as you watch the Japanese invest billions of dollars in chip manufacturing, you're watching the United States spend billions of dollars on chip manufacturing in the United States. This is going on in Western Europe because they realize that that chip manufacturing capacity of Taiwan is an existential threat to the global economy if anything should happen to Taiwan, right? These plants aren't built in a weekend. They, on average, take about 7 years from start to finish, right? Every single thing in the building is machined to a tolerance and is custom made. So you're watching this capacity that perhaps for a set of chips might have been 75% Taiwan, maybe go down to 50%, maybe go down to 40, 30%. And then there becomes a certain point at which Taiwan becomes less valuable to the world. And the reality is the war games on any Chinese invasion of Taiwan, the Chinese get punished quite a bit. The Taiwanese know that there are Chinese sleeper agents on the island who have instructions to kill, just like the Maoists did in Vietnam. Veterans will remember in Hue, where they had lists of all the civil leaders, all the religious leaders, all of the teachers, professors, lawyers, judges, all were immediately murdered in the 21st 24 hours. That's the chaos that will ensue immediately in the streets of Taiwan. And
Wow.
as a result, the Taiwanese military is bifurcated, i.e., like, when it goes, here are your orders. You're cut off. You launch everything. Immediately, the launching places of any potential waterborne invasion from the Chinese mainland would be utterly hammered with missile strikes. This means, Chinese glass cities would not look the way they do today. So China pays a big price. And all these people who think Taiwan can just be rolled over, you have to remember Taiwan is basically a big rock in the middle of the ocean. It's not surrounded by beaches. It's got like four beaches where someone could land. Otherwise, you're coming up on cliff faces.
Got
It's not a pushover, but my worry is that the economics get us to a point where that what's the economic worth of defending Taiwan? Because clearly, American foreign policy doesn't have a great track record in their moral responsibilities.
it. So does America jump in if China attacks? That's number one. And number two, are you saying that China is a paper tiger militarily?
China has never successfully in its history projected force outside of its borders, other than, okay, you want to say Genghis Khan, but then I'm going to default and say he's a Mongol, not Han Chinese, right? He was a foreigner who invaded China. So this is the case. I mean, it's just reality. All we have to do is go back to 1979 and watch the Vietnamese kick their tails in that little skirmish. So a big problem with the Chinese military is that because of the way it's structured, you don't necessarily have the best officers in positions of leadership. Because they've never done large-scale ground operations, they don't necessarily have complete understanding of the logistics. And sure, they could build an aircraft carrier, but they got a lot of crashes too. These are skill sets that require decades of institutional knowledge that can be passed down to equally capable people to be passed to the next generation. And it's not something that's built in an afternoon. They're getting there. I mean, let's forget, remember, the Imperial Japanese didn't have a navy till about 1895 either. And they were our peers 50 years later.
Well, I semi agree with you about the Chinese. They don't seem to be great fighters. Even the Indians kind of defeated them in a couple of recent skirmishes. But they are very powerful from a financial standpoint, and they have economic power, and we're kind of beholden to them, which leads me to my next question. It's a broader question about Joe Biden. Do you think that he is beholden to China and Ukraine because of his shady dealings, or is he just a part of a globalist machine which is just asserting its power through totalitarianism?
Well, I can't just give like a facile answer to that, but Joe Biden had two portfolios, shall we say, given him by Barack Obama. One was to take care of the Russian invasion of Crimea and play tough guy in Ukraine. And what does he do? Ultimately, his son ends up getting a job on Burisma, an oil company. I would say most of their operating assets are to the present day in Crimea. So former CIA and State Department ambassador guy is profiting essentially from oil coming from occupied territory. So did Hunter the whole time. If you look at Hunter's first trip with Burisma, it's actually a trip from Paris to Kazakhstan in June of 2016. Hunter leaves the Secret Service behind. I guess they get to hang out in the Lincoln Hotel at taxpayers' expense in Paris. He flies to Kazakhstan with Devin Archer. They meet up with a guy named Masimov, who at the time was prime minister. He variously has held either head of state security, either head of CIA or prime minister. He was in the Nazarbayev government the whole time. Remember, Nazarbayev was president for life. In writing, the purpose of that trip is to get Masimov to sell the best oil and gas leases in Kazakhstan to Chinese Energy Fuel Corporation, or to CNOOC, Chinese National Offshore Oil Corporation. This is not a Shanghai listed company. This is not some like quasi, oh, they're just like us.
It's government, basically.
The state oil company created in 1949 because they knew they had to import oil. It's in writing. All right. And then Masimov is the same guy who you see later in the Cafe Milano picture with Joe and another guy named Kemiz Rakishev. Kemiz Rakishev is an oligarch who controls the uranium and part the banking system. It's clear as day. Yes, he's beholden to the Chinese. And then you look at all the other deals that went on around the world. Hunter flew down on Air Force Two to meet with the Mexicans because they were trying to sell the offshore oils in the Gulf of Mexico from Pemex to CEFC. It's all in writing. It's all there. These cowards in the United States Congress and Senate who say they can't find any evidence. You know, who's the big guy? Well, why are union officials at the Teamsters describing him as the big guy all the way back in correspondence with Hunter in 2010 if he's not the big guy?
Yeah.
It's in your face. And then what was Joe Biden's other mandate for his portfolio was to go talk sense to those Chinese about those landfilled aircraft holes in the South China Sea. He goes over there, utterly fails, takes Hunter with him. And a month and a half later, Hunter gets a $1.5 billion investment guarantee from the Bank of China. This is Chairman Xi.
Yeah.
Okay. And when I talk about Metabiota and Hunter first goes to Ukraine to sell Metabiota, well, there's correspondence where Hunter's partner, Eric Schwerin, is like, hey, Hunter, we should hook up those guys at Metabiota with Xiao Ying's husband at the CDC. Xiao Ying is a woman named Xiao Ying Zhang. I have her photographs. I know everything about her. I've got multiple people who will witness that this is exactly who she is. She's the daughter of a family in Shanghai that Joe Biden was hosted by in 1989. This is how you people have to understand how these foreign adversaries play the game. You know, we replace somebody every 5 years. Xiao Ying has been the interpreter, the hand holder of the Biden family, every single member from day one. Her name is Xiao Ying Zhang Gao. Her husband is George Gao, the head of the Chinese CDC.
Wow.
You can look up papers on COVID or coronaviruses with Metabiota and their scientists and George Gao. And yes, they were all working together. And I know about this not because Jack Maxey's a superior investigator, but because people know that I'm an honest broker and I'm brave enough always to tell the truth, even at my own detriment. And if you want to get into how the Israelis have more of Hunter's laptops than I do, I'd be happy to discuss.
Wow.
The fact of the matter is people from U.S. military intelligence were the ones who came and told me about Metabiota.
So you say there's more to Hunter's laptop than what you have?
Yes.
Explain that, please.
On the weekend of October 3rd, 2018, Hunter was whooping it up with a beautiful Russian girl named Anna and her three Russian friends. And Hunter speaks about this on camera. He talks about when a prostitute at a hotel in Naugatuck, Connecticut in February of 2019, police showed up. Somehow, someone always waves the police off. probably some Secret Service agents sitting in the lot to make sure the president's son doesn't get embarrassed. So she's a heroin addict, but she has a sense to go shoot up in the bathroom. We only know she's shooting up because Hunter's always going through her purse and pulling out needles the whole weekend.
What a guy.
She tells Hunter, why are you smoking crack in front of the camera? I mean, your dad was vice president. Aren't you worried about blackmail? And he says, no, man, this hot chick, Anna, who I really love. And Anna, kudos to you, man. Total pro, man. I'd marry you tomorrow. Because she never gives it up. She always just hires real hookers when Hunter gets randy and is super high. And so she brings her three buddies from Russia. There's photographs of all these people. I've put it online. And they, according to Hunter, steal a laptop, two iPads, a cell phone. And it was pretty clear to me, my investigation of the laptop, that Hunter went to lengths to clean it up in between October and the loss of it in April 2019.
So what you have is the cleaned up version. That's amazing. Yeah.
And so here's what I have to say. So I was told in February of 21 by a dear friend, a prominent good person, also someone who loves Israel, said, hey, listen, I heard from a friend that Mossad was shopping Hunter Biden laptop stuff to Sean Hannity's producer.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, Sean Hannity shut it down. Look, see how I'm always willing to name names?
Another one, huh?
Right? So
another friend of the conservatives in America.
I find that video later in March of 21 after a friend of mine's son says, listen, there's a lot of downtime in those videos. You should actually listen to what they're saying, because I watched it the first time at 30 times speed because there's 30 hours of the junk, right? You know, that's easily findable. If you went and got every clip, there's probably 70 hours, you know? Wow. And so I listened to it, and I hear him discussing how Anna and her three Russian friends stole the laptop. And I remember, right, it's these three Russian-looking guys, Slavic-looking guys. And I know Anna because he talks about her all the time. She's actually the woman whose ponytail is getting pulled in that picture that you see in every meme.
Wow.
And I mentioned this in Boca Raton, Florida. I think I'm in a friendly audience between the Jewish and Christian, and I tell the story. I tell it at the time, thinking, good, I'm so glad someone's holding a sword of Damocles over Biden. And I think proof of that what I'm saying is true, and I have even more proof. You remember how Joe Biden ran on the idea that he was going to lift the sanctions on Iran, and he was going to make it so that we're going to normalized relationship.
He was basically taking off all the stuff that Trump did, and basically.
The day after the inauguration, he goes full circle. He's actually going to be harsher than Trump, right? So I say this only one time in front of that group because at the time, I don't want to cause any problems for Israel because I'm thinking, hey, man, we're on the same team, brother. Well, I got a visit from Mossad. I was thrown into a chair in Puerto Rico on February 14th of 22, right as I'm planning on going to Switzerland to reveal everything. I showed them everything. There was nothing fake about it. And give it a details discussion about it, what exactly happened. I mean, it was not fake. And I immediately called my people in the United States who were agency people, retired. But fact of the matter is, people know about this. At the time, also, you have to remember, when we first discovered this, I'm talking to other intel people. We were like, who cares? Like, who doesn't have everything that Hunter has? He brags about seeking out prostitutes in every city.
Exactly.
Earth. I'm like, I'm thinking like the Mexicans have this, the Serbians have, every place Hunter's ever been has all this stuff, right?
He wasn't discreet. That's true.
No, not at all. And I never said anything about it till the present day. But the fact of the matter is, at some point, we have to discuss the future of the planet openly, not with criticism, but with this open discussion of what is actually going on behind the scenes in all of these conflicts that are around the world, from Gaza to the thing. And you said it earlier, you wanted to talk about, did CIA or did some liberal element inside Israeli intelligence do this? I would have to say that, sadly, probably not. I think that the people of Israel overestimate the intelligence capacity of Mossad. The United States citizen overestimates the intelligence capacity of CIA. And I'll tell you where they've gone. They've really failed. You have to understand that this electronic surveillance that all top-tier nations have developed is so good that they're listening to everything, whether your cell phone's off or not. They know every single thing. So there's this perception that they have this inside knowledge of exactly what's going on. But as our adversaries understand that this is the new reality, well, they just go back to the old spycraft, you know?
Correct, correct.
Handwritten notes, you know? Correct. I think that this is one of the reasons also why I said, you know, there has to be an open discussion of how this intelligence failure happened. Why? So it doesn't happen again, right? So another 1,000 innocent people don't have to get killed at a dance party.
Well, I fully agree with you. Perhaps it was the arrogance and the hubris of the Israelis that led to this disaster. Again, I still think that there were people that let this happen.
Israel has a really smart, they take super smart girls from high school, right? And they put them on observation posts along the Gaza Strip because they're intelligent, you know, they're very detailed oriented, but you know, they're not going to be running a pack up and down the mountainsides, right?
They're girls, exactly. They're girls.
They're in a role where they can really be effective. Apparently, and I don't know if this is true or not, they say that these women were warning their superiors and their superiors. Maybe they're just some mid-level major. Those girls are always talking, you know, like, let's get back to, you know, the soccer game. I don't know. But all this needs to be discussed for the safety of Israel. And I think part of Netanyahu's reluctance to do this is that he thinks it will reflect poorly on him. And this is, again, a guy putting his own interests before his people. And I don't like that because, you know, people are dying, man. You're not willing to put your stuff at risk. Look at his own kid.
Jack, I read all this stuff. I know all this stuff. I know people that know him and people that know other politicians. Like I said earlier, all politicians are interested in themselves. Now, that doesn't mean that their self-interest does not ally with the interests of their nations necessarily. Now, hopefully the Mossad doesn't show up at my home here in San Francisco after this conversation, okay? I'm just a talk show host.
Here's the thing that you have to understand, right? This is how these intelligence agencies from Mossad to CIA, how they operate, right? Your instant response is like, now that I know this stuff, I'm probably going to edit it all out and I'm scared shitless because Mossad kills people. Well, if that's the case, and they'll do it in a sovereign nation like the United States, then we have a really messed up relationship with our great ally, Israel. And the fact of the matter, after John Pollard, they were not supposed to be doing deep influence operations inside the United States. And this operation to steal the vice president's feckless electronic equipment started the spring of 2018. This wasn't like $50 and I met him at a bar. This was a operation that took effort, took planning at the highest levels. I'm talking at the prime ministerial level, because you don't target another head of state's child without that kind of consent. And the world needs to know that this is the kind of thing that's going on.
But so Jack, to be fair, and I'm not defending any of those spy agencies. I have nothing to do with any of them. They all spy on each other. America spies on its friends. Its friends spy on America. That's just a game. And you know that.
Brother, I agree. But here's the problem. It's not these citizens in these wonderful democracies like Israel or the United States who are actually debating, openly debating, like, our future. What kind of security do we want? Which nation do we want our kids to grow up in? You're actually having these intelligence agencies foment wars in Ukraine. You and I are right now, as two rational people, debating Were there elements in our own government, maybe even in the Israeli government, who would sacrifice their own citizens to create something? You know, this is terrifying. And it's terrifying that we all acknowledge this, but nobody's willing to do anything about it. I mean, how many more people need to die on planet Earth?
Please stick around for the last part of our interview with Jack Maxey, where he gives us some very interesting predictions.
You're listening to the AJ Steele Show, where no topic is off limits, no discussion too harsh, no truth more true. The AJ Steele Show, we tell it like it is.
All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl. All I really want to be.
Jack, we're complaining about a lot of things together. You don't like Trump. You don't like Netanyahu. You don't like Zelensky. But let me ask you a serious question. Who can we trust? Who can the average American who's hungry for news and hungry for leadership that cares for this nation trust?
They can trust me.
Are you running for president?
Well, you know what? Somebody like me should run for president, because so far we've been led by feckless cowards who absolutely, you know, bear no resemblance to the heroes who created this country, the people who I hold as leitmotifs in my own life. I can't find a single politician. The only ones I trust are Thomas Massey and Rand Paul. The only ones I trust. And you'll notice, look at their tweets. They're starting to figure out that CIA was behind those bio labs, and CIA was behind the research in Wuhan. And little Fauci was the top of the heap. I'm telling you, people, he was making the staffing choices and deciding on the science. These people deserve to be in a Nuremberg doctor's trial 2.0 for what they've done to this planet. And I'm saying this as an American. My country is guilty of awful crimes against humanity.
Yeah, but we live in a drugged up, apathetic country. Most Americans don't care. Everything that you're telling me, some of it I agree with, like I said earlier, and some I don't. People won't pay attention. You know that this is an echo chamber, much like Twitter, which you keep mentioning and which I like. Is Twitter even real? People that like me listen to me. People that like you listen to you. But is the average American paying attention? That's the question.
Well, listen, you may not want to listen, but you're definitely going to learn. As Mike Tyson said, everyone has a plan until they're punched in the face. And I'm going to say that America is teetering on the brink of disaster. One of the worst things that no one wants to discuss about the sanctions against Russia was, as the second largest oil producer in the world, or third largest oil producer in the world, that oil has to go somewhere. And prior to the sanctions, all that oil was denominated in U.S. dollars. All settlements for Russian grain were settled in U.S. dollars. The whole reason we can print money and, you know, have $1 trillion every 6 week debt is because every country on planet Earth that needs oil, needs gas, needs kerosene for their jets, needs wheat, needs rice, needs corn, has to purchase that and settle those purchases in U.S. dollars. So every central bank on planet Earth is by default required to keep dollar or dollar-denominated reserves, which would be our crap debt. Mm-hmm. And so this props up our broken system, right? And as we've seen with Russia, wow, apparently you can move like 25% of the world's oil and 20% of its grain and sell it and not have to use U.S. dollars.
Well, Iran has been doing it for a long time as well.
They know that. Sanctions have never worked in history. They never worked in Rhodesia, and they never worked in South Africa. They didn't work in Iran. They didn't. All they do is make the common people on the ground suffer more. And these are the organic people who, you know, if we look at perception as reality, those are the people who you're trying to bring to your side. You know, the people at the top never suffer from sanctions. It's only the little guy in the street who's paying double for his rice or double for his gasoline. The organic people that you wish to bring to your side, you destroy with the sanctions. And so Putin's stronger than he's ever been.
Financially, for sure.
Yeah, NATO's weaker than it's ever been. This dollar-denominated financial system that we have been blessed with since the Bretton Woods Agreement, I think, of 46, which has artificially allowed America to run debts that would have buried any other country decades ago. All this is starting to unwind. And I think that's very, very dangerous for King Dollar going forward. And I think that we are headed for an economic headwinds that will make 2008-09 look like child's play, because no one's stepping in to protect those bad mortgages like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The bad debt today is held by regional banks. So it's all the commercial real estate, right? That's going to collapse. And, you know, this crazy, you know, an apartment in New York costs $2 million. That's ending pronto.
Well, I made a lot of money in the last crash because smart people always keep a little money for a rainy day. But let me ask you really quick, and I want quick answers if you don't mind. How is the war in Ukraine going to end?
The war in Ukraine is going to end with a settlement. Putin is going to get exactly what he wants. I think if Zelensky keeps going, he's going to take Odessa. I think that you're going to see that the Poles and the Romanians and the Hungarians are going to begin to understand they may have an interest in a settlement. They might get back all their territories from Western Ukraine. I see Ukraine becoming a kind of rump state and the Western powers blaming them for not being brave enough because we did everything we could. That's what they always do. And I think it's going to be a free-for-all for Blackstone and everyone else who's going to go in and buy all that Lebensraum that they've created through murdering a generation of Ukrainians.
So Putin wins. Now, where does the Israel war end?
I pray that the Israel war ends sooner rather than later, because I think if it widens, you're going to have a really big problem. You've already got the Democrats in the House and Senate who were old reliables up until about, you know, the last 6 weeks,
yeah,
saying that they want no part in it. You've got the American people independent of Israel. I think the most American people are 100% with Israel. But what you have a problem is you have this country that is on its knees in terms of the psychological sense of self. And in reality, in my belief, economically, we just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
And the idea of engaging in another regional war that requires that we go to war footing and spend another couple $1 trillion is not on anyone's plate. And beyond that, neither is the military industrial capacity to engage in another war like that. We don't have the Navy. We don't have the airlift. We don't have the sea lift. And the battle space is different.
So potentially a nuclear war. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, here's what I think would be awful, right? Let's say they do go into a regional war and they decide, you know, Iran's going to dump every missile that they've got on Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and every single target they can. Like, the objective is kill as many people.
Of course. Mayhem, yes. Absolute mayhem. Hey,
what's Israel's response going to be?
It's got to be nukes. I don't see any other play.
And then at that point, you know, what is Pakistan, you know, drop one? Right? I mean, let's get real. The Saudi Arabians, and everybody knows this in intelligence circles, the Saudi Arabians funded the entire Pakistani nuclear program.
And don't be so sure that the Iranians haven't bought some nukes themselves.
You really trust the Pakistanis? There's a tacit
agreement
that, you know, I think Erdogan even has, like, you know, hey, if we need one.
Very scary.
I wouldn't want to push Erdogan into choosing sides in a larger war. Remember, Turkey has been allowing a lot of fuel and things like that to get through to Israel. But Erdogan just suffered basically a
huge loss
in the elections. And the defeat is because Erdogan's not hardcore enough.
Well, you know, the great luck of Israel in America is that the Muslims don't get along with one another. I have one last question. Who's going to be our next president?
If I had to guess today, I think it'll probably be Manchin, if the Democrats are smart.
Wow. Okay. My final question for you is, how can our audience find out more about you and what you have to say?
Well, Jack Maxey won on Twitter. I'm thinking if I'm ever in the same place for more than 10 or 12 days, I may sit down and start doing a daily podcast on how I view the world. And what I would say to everybody is you're living in a house of mirrors. Nothing is what it seems. And if we don't get to the bottom of the secret behavior that is causing war and destruction by our intelligence agencies and other intelligence agencies, then we're not sovereign people anymore, and the whole democratic process is a joke.
Wow. Well, Jack Maxey, I want to thank you for coming on the AJ Steele Show. I hope you continue speaking out, and I wish you continued success and safety.
Thank you, AJ. God bless you, man. And, you know, we got to save this planet. You know, human life should be all of our number one priority, you know, whose ever it is, right?
Absolutely.
Soldier on.
All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl. All I really want to be. All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl.
The AJ Steele Show. Copyrighted 2024.